Your Locked On Senators, your daily podcast on the Ottawa Senators. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
I'm Jake Sanderson, and you're listening to Locked On Senators Podcast.
I'm Tim Stützle, and you're listening to the Locked On Senators Podcast.
Welcome inside episode 338 of the Locked On Senators Podcast. I'm Ross Levitan in the heart of enemy territory, downtown Toronto, alongside Brandon Piller up in Collingwood. Today's episode is brought to you by The Locker Room. Download the Locker Room app and join Pilsy and I this Saturday morning at 10 a.m. to get in on the conversation. It's interactive radio. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. Well, as a goalie-friendly show, we're super excited to have the Great Dane, Mad Sogard, join us for not one part, but two. We had such a great conversation with the Belleville Sens netminder that he'll be on tomorrow as well. So stay tuned for that. We also have the NHL Stanley Cup semifinals going on, and these series are as intense as possible. We'll recap last night's game, look ahead to today, and are we closer to a Jack Eichel trade? What are the potential landing spots? We'll get Pilsy's opinion on that. This is the Locked On Senators Podcast, your team every day. Today is Wednesday, June 16th, and Pilsy, are we officially Mad Sogard guys?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were Mad Sogard guys before, but now that he's joined the show, you guys know us. We always stand up for our guys. So add another goalie to the collection of the hashtag goalie-friendly show.
Yeah, so it's Joey Decord, it's Kevin Mandelaze, and now Mad Sogard on the list. And his personality is even as big as the 6'8 frame that he embodies on the ice. We get into how he grew into that frame, because it's not easy to be as athletic and your hand-eye coordination when you spurt up that tall at such a young age. So stay tuned for a fun conversation with him, Pilsy. And I'm starting to look at the Sens depth chart going into next year, at least in goal, because there's a lot in flux up front. But since they re-signed Anton Forsberg, Levi Mäkelä has been brought in on a contract, although all expectations point to him returning to Finland and continuing his development there. How do you see the hierarchy shaking out? Matt Murray's your highly paid starter at the NHL level, but what's the trickle-down effect after that?
Yeah, it certainly is interesting. I mean, if there's one thing we know about the Sens, Ross, is it's always interesting in the crease. Like, they never have, like, a set plan. There's always new guys coming in, guys leaving, upcoming rookies, all these kinds of things. So they keep it interesting. I'm with you. We're going to keep Matt Murray as the number one starter in Ottawa. He's going to have a bounce-back season. I just know it. We need it. Not I know it. We need it to happen. And then I think signing Anton Forsberg was a great idea. That's a solid, savvy veteran backup that can play a bunch of games if Matt Murray gets injured, which he is injury prone. And he can also maybe cover some of Matt Murray's slumps. Like, if Matt Murray has a bit of a slump, you can get Forsberg in there for a couple games. Then now we head down to the AHL. I think it's got to be a battle between Mad Sogard and Philip Gustafson. Some people might say, well, Philip Gustafson's already got the job, but when you have a guy like the Great Dane coming in with a 7-0 record, the least you're going to do is say there's some inside competition for that job. So I think that's where you're going to get the competition. And then it's tough because I don't know where that leaves Kevin Mandelaze, guest of the show. We want him to have a chance. He kind of got screwed over last year, not through anyone's fault, just the way things happened. And with no Brampton, he can't go there. So he's going to be kind of the third guy in Belleville that's going to be getting in games here or there. Or really, he's going to be banking, and it sounds awful, but he's going to be banking on an injury to get some opportunities to get on the ice.
One thing that's still uncertain is whether the NHL is going to remain roster sizes one or two higher at the NHL level. Maybe Pierre Dorion had some inkling of that, which is why potentially they locked up Anton Forsberg after the season, gave him that one-year extension, because that would alleviate some problems here, right? Not only would your starter get a couple more rest days or personal training days where he goes on with the goalie coach and then the second and third string can stay out for practice if they need it, if the schedule is tight in that week or something. But you're right, even without factoring in the potential and
I mean, you didn't mention Joey. He's got to be in the mix there as well. Like, is that something that's already kind of unspoken, that Seattle is more than likely going to get to take one of the best dudes and a great goalie prospect off Ottawa's hands? There's just an embarrassment of riches at that position in Ottawa.
Hand up. I can't believe I forgot Joey Dax, man. That's brutal. I was looking at the Cap Friendly page and he was on the injured part. So that, right. I'll say that's my excuse, but it's not a good one. So Joey Dax, like, that just adds another piece to the puzzle. I'm not sure where he's going to end up.
What I'm saying is that potentially if Dax does not get selected, let's say for the purpose of this exercise, it's Chris Tierney going to Seattle. Nice. I'm sure Sens fans, yeah, everyone give a big cheer, song two, Blur plays in the background. But let's say that happens and Ottawa's allowed three goalies. To me, it's a no-brainer that Joey has the inside track of being on the NHL roster to start. He's 24, turning 25. Like, at what point is his development curve just ready to excel at the next level? And he looked great in the short sample size, but then you could argue Gustafson. However, Gus won't need waivers this upcoming season. Dax would.
Yeah, and that's where it's tough. Yeah, I can see what you're saying. Like, if there was kind of a taxi squad scenario roster again, then yeah, get Joey as your backup in the NHL and keep Forsberg as your taxi squad guy. But also, they might have signed Forsberg, and I'd have to look into this, but the intricacies of the expansion draft, maybe they needed another goalie with a certain amount of games played that needs to be signed for another year. You know how there's that little, right, little asterisk for expansion draft? So maybe that was a part of bringing Forsberg back as well, maybe to entice Seattle to take him instead of one of the other guys. I don't think that's going to happen, but yeah, it's going to be real interesting to see what happens with goaltending. Like, but I think one thing, like you said off the top, we know for sure is the Sens will not be bringing in another goalie. Like, there's no way that's happening.
You sure?
I'm going to say I'm 95% sure. If they bring in another goalie, I will be baffled. Hashtag goalie friendly show, the more the merrier. But man, eventually you got to get these guys their proper ice time.
Especially when you don't have an East Coast League team anymore with the unfortunate collapse of the Brampton Beast, or folding, I should say. But when you look at Belleville last season, seven different goalies played for Belleville, Pilsy. That has to be nearly a league high going back to a full season. Now, they did this in only 33 games, I believe, the AHL played last year. So you look at it, Gustafson led the team with 13 games. And then Mandelaze played 9. And then Sogard had 7. 7 wins, is that good? And then you saw Dax, Cedric Andre, Marcus Hogberg all get 2 starts. And, of course, Anton Forsberg had that 1 conditioning start to get back into the swing of things before coming up and only playing at the NHL level. So that just shows you the volatility of the position, right? When that many guys can get into games at the AHL level. So it's better to have too many than to be calling up the former university goalie who just happens to live in the Quinte area, right? So when you look at how it's shaken out, I think Ottawa's in a position of strength here where if a team comes calling and wants to add to their prospect cupboard, they could be open to trade that way. Or you can just have insurance should injuries or, you know, a condensed schedule or, God forbid, Seattle comes calling to take somebody off your hands.
Yeah, I think you said it. It's a good problem to have for sure. And we know injuries are a thing with Sens goalies. Like, I feel like every year there's Sens goalie injury controversy. Well, not controversy,
Going back to your boy Dominik Hasek.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Craig Anderson had some injuries. Like, it's
cutting
it's
raw chicken.
Hey, that who hasn't had that injury as an NHL goalie? It happens. But yeah, that's the thing. Like, there's so many options. I think it's all going to trickle down with the Seattle expansion draft. That's where it all starts.
July 21st, we will know who Seattle is taking. And it'll be interesting to see when the protected list comes out and how public they'll be made. I felt like Vegas's team was picked 5 days before, right? You had all these situations where GMs were tinkering with, oh, I'll give you this draft pick for that. And it seemed like Pierre LeBrun and others were all over it before it happened. I mentioned Pierre LeBrun because later on after the interview, we're going to discuss Jack Eichel. In LeBrun's piece today, he talks about Gerard Gallant, who stick taps getting hired as the Rangers coach. That's big for them. But the Jack Eichel trade might be more imminent than we believe. The lead of the article said, who says the Stanley Cup has to be handed out before Jack Eichel is traded? So great read from Pierre LeBrun there. We'll discuss that on the other side. But before we get to the interview, Pilsy, you've had 24 hours now since the Jack Capuano saga, we'll call it. It's not quite Ubergate. It's not quite some of the other things that we've been dealt as Sens fans. But now that we've had some time to process it, what are your feelings about not being allowed to speak to the Sabres while he's under contract for one last year as an associate with Ottawa? The Sabres, of course, wanting to speak with him about their vacant head coaching position.
Yeah, well, I think it's fair to say that I need to admit that my thought process was probably not right. I thought maybe this was a case of Jack Capuano not wanting to go there, but it seems like, and it's being made clear that from Elliot Friedman's reports that, no, this is just a straight-up case of the Sens being like, we don't care whether you want to go there or not. You're signed with us, and you're going to stay with us. And that's harsh. It looks harsh. It doesn't look good. It's not a good PR move, but it is what it is. This is a business. They have him under contract. It's within their rights to say, no, you can't interview. So that's what they did. I would be surprised if after this, Ross, that Jack Capuano re-ups his contract as an associate coach with the Senators. I think that bridge is kind of burning and it's about to crumble here into some coals.
Yeah, sounds like there could be a feud coming was the words that Elliot Friedman used. We don't have to get too much further into that. I agree. It just doesn't look great. But at the same time, you're right. If you want to retain him and you think he's been a big part of this coaching staff, then you have every right to not allow that situation to unfold.
Or just maybe it's a case that the Sens are like, we had you penciled in as the associate coach. We don't have a backup. And you worked really well with this team. DJ Smith likes you. And maybe if they had a guy ready to fill that role, then maybe they allow it. But it seems like they're just not prepared for it. And it wasn't part of their plan.
Perfect lead-in to the news Chris Stevenson brought to the table this morning, saying that Troy Mann is still without a contract. Now, on Wally Mathot's show last week, Troy Mann said that maybe the next step is to be an NHL assistant. I never know which one's above which on the hierarchy of coaching, like an assistant in the NHL or a head coach at the AHL level. I guess the meals on the plane are a little better as the assistant in the NHL. But if that's a step that I think Troy Mann wanted to take, wouldn't Ottawa be kind of happy to shed an assistant that direction and give him the avenue to become the NHL assistant coach? But that same token, he's done such a great job in Belleville. If you're the organization, that's probably where you want him, at least for this next year. We saw how young they were and how many prospects they have up and coming. Maybe one more year down there would be ideal. But it sounds, Pilsy, like progress has been made on a contract extension, and signing Troy Mann is a huge piece to next season in the development of this young core.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. And Troy Mann said he doesn't mind the food. He said he loves Harvey's, so maybe he's down to be an AHL coach for a little longer. He can afford those Harvey combo deals. But I think, yeah, when you say, I don't know what's higher, an AHL head coach or an NHL associate, I think you need to get AHL head coaching experience. And then I think you want to get to an NHL level so that you're comfortable with the processes of it as an associate. And then maybe you get a better look as an NHL head coach when you get a little bit more reputation, you get a little more experience at the top level. So maybe I think you're right. It's more important to have Troy Mann in Belleville for another season than maybe you have some sort of clause in the contract that after that, and if Jack Capuano's associate coaching job is available, which it probably will be, then you can move up into that route and see how things go. Like, man, imagine a coaching staff with DJ Smith and Troy Mann. That sounds amazing to me. You get the player's coach in DJ, the guy who keeps it light, he manages personalities, and then you get an X's and O's guy like Troy Mann who knows all these guys pretty much. They all played for him in Belleville, and he's just such a hockey mind. Now, I'm not saying DJ Smith isn't, but his bread and butter is more the personality side of it, where then you can get a guy who's more focused on the ins and outs on the ice in Troy Mann to help balance that. So I think that's something we could see play out.
Yeah, and whether or not that deal comes to fruition on a weekday, you'll hear it here on Locked On Senators, or if it happens on the weekend, it's likely going to be discussed in the locker room. Pilsy and I are in the locker room once a week. It's a live audio-only sports talk platform that's free to download and to use, and Pilsy and I love it because it adds an interactive live element to the podcast. Now, you can join ongoing conversations, watch games together. Hell, we had our draft lottery party in the locker room. You can join with me and Pilsy and be featured on the podcast. I'll be hosting rooms every week. And this weekend, it's going to be Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Typically, Pilsy and I like to do it Sunday morning, but shout out all the good dads out there for Father's Day. We're going to move it up to Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Will Troy Mann be signed by then? Will Jack Eichel have a new area code? We'll discuss all those hot topics. And as rankings trickle out, we're getting ever so close to beginning our top 75 countdown. So if you have any draft questions you want to ask us, head over to the locker room on Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Here's how you do it. Go to your app store, whether it's on the iOS store or Android, and download the locker room app, create a profile, link your Twitter, and join the NHL group. You can follow me at Ross Levitan or at Brandon Pillar. We also post it on Twitter. So go to @SendCentral on Twitter and you can click the link. Bang, you're right there. And we'll see you there at 10 a.m. on Saturday morning. Come with your spiciest takes. It's interactive radio, changing the way we talk sports. Loving the locker room.
And for that morning locker room, guys, get your day started off right with a Built Bar. It's the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. I usually like to have mine in the morning. It's a great kind of in-between breakfast and lunch. I have a bowl of cereal for breakfast. Then when I'm editing the podcast, I like to get a little protein boost with the Built Bar. There's 16 amazing flavors, guys. The bars are covered in 100% chocolate. Love that. They're soft and easy to chew. The texture is one of my favorite parts of them. Built Bar is great for the health-conscious guy or girl. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. They're so good, I promise you. Bars are low calorie, yep, low sugar, oh yeah, but high protein and high fiber. Nothing that you don't want, lots of what you do want. How are you gonna get these Built Bars though? Head to builtbar.com. Their new website is so good. It's so interactive. The pictures on there are amazing. And they let you know about deals that are going on. We're talking about Built Bars, but maybe you're like, one Built Bar is a little too much for me. How about trying Built Bites? It's the mini size ones. It's almost like, you know, Halloween, you get those little chocolate bars. It's like that, but with a tasty, delicious protein bar. It's 15% off for Built Bites right now on builtbar.com. So check them out. I would suggest let's try a raspberry Built Bite. You get a little bit of chocolate, a little bit of raspberry in a nice package and 15% off. Not only are Built Bites 15% off, I'm going to hook you up with another 15% off. How about that? Built Bar, the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. And you can go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKED15. And that's how you're going to get another 15% off your next order. One more time, guys, go to builtbar.com, use promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your next order. Built Bar, the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar.
All right, here he is. Belleville Sens Tendi, Mad Sogard. All right, we now welcome a very, very special guest, a native of Aalborg, Denmark. This Tendi was drafted 37th overall by your Ottawa Senators after they traded up seven spots to ensure they got their guy. Since he starred for both the Medicine Hat Tigers and back home in Denmark during the COVID pause before making his organizational debut with Belleville, where he went undefeated in seven starts. Mads Sogard, welcome to Locked On Senators. How you doing today, man?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, we're doing really well. First things first, you're back home in Denmark following the season. What's a typical day in the off-season life for you this summer?
You know, after the season ended, I took about a week and a half off. And since then, it's just been going back to work. So, I mean, like a typical day's workout in the morning. And maybe if I have some time, go hang out with some friends or play some golf or something like that. And then go right back at it and work out again in the evening. And then after that, just spend some time with family and do it all again the next day.
Nice. Yeah. Sounds like you got a good routine going. Now, when you're doing your workouts and stuff, are there other prospects or hockey players that you typically do this with, or do you mostly do it by yourself with a trainer?
No, I've had my trainer here. He's a really, really good trainer. And I work out with a couple of other guys. I work out with Nikolai Ehlers from the Winnipeg Jets as well. Work out with Joachim Blickfeld. Is just getting his feet wet for San Jose Sharks now. A couple other guys, like junior guys and pro guys here in Denmark. So we got a good little group, and we're all pushing each other every day to get better.
That's awesome. Yeah, I got to see Nikolai Ehlers a lot when I was in Halifax the 2 years when he was playing there. What a good talent. So at least that means you got some high-level shooters that you get to play with or practice with during the summer months. But the way we like to do these interviews is rewind the clock all the way. Now, we're a goalie-friendly show. I started when I was 9. Pilsy strapped him on when he was 13. How young were you when you first played goalie?
Oh, man, I think I started out like playing hockey when I was like 3 and a half, and I had like a half season of playing as a player. And I think I've been a goalie since I was like 4 years old. So pretty much my entire life I've been between the pipes.
So what made you switch? Like you said, only half a season out there as a forward or a defenseman. What made you switch and be like, nah, I'm not doing that. I'll stay in my crease.
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I don't think I was a very good hockey player, but, you know, I loved everything about it. You know, you get to play the full game, all the nice equipment, and, you know, at a young age, I was very fascinated by all of that, and just being able to play, a full hockey game, which I thought was awesome, and also, you know, getting to know more about goaltending as I grew up. I liked the pressure it puts on you. Like you can be the difference in there, and sometimes you're the hero, and sometimes you're the bad guy. And I kind of like that pressure. I think it's a lot of fun, and I've just enjoyed it ever since I started.
So you're now, what, 6'8"? How many pairs of gear did you have to go through when you were growing up? I feel like it must have been every other year you grew out of your pads.
Yeah, I mean, I think my parents are happy where I am now, and they don't have to pay for my equipment anymore, because, oh, man, I was running through a lot. And, I mean, from pads to skates to gloves and pants and whatever, I mean, I was going through it all, and definitely. I think I had one summer where I really grew a lot, so that was like the biggest step. And obviously, I needed new equipment after that year. But throughout my young years and growing up, I was always a tall kid, and I always had to. I was always a little bit further than the rest of the guys in my age group with height and everything like that. So yeah.
Yeah, that definitely helps being a taller kid growing up. Now, did you have any family members or close friends that were goalies that inspired you, or even some Danish goaltenders in the area or that were playing in other pro leagues that inspired you to be a tendy? Or is just, I don't like skating and I'm a big kid, so I might as well get in the crease?
Well, you know what? It started out by my dad taking me to the pro games in my hometown here. We would go watch the hockey games, and you know, this goalie that played in my hometown, his name was Martin Holst. He's a Swedish guy, and I just thought he was amazing. I still think to this day he's one of the best goalies that the organization of Aalborg has ever had. So I was really fascinated by him and how he was playing goalie and everything. So that inspired me a lot. But yeah, as I said, like just being able to play lots of hockey, I love being on the ice and quickly figured out the goalie gets to be on there a lot more than just the player. So that was definitely part of it too.
So you grew up Denmark, you played for the same youth organization growing up. Tell us about Mark Peterson, because I feel like he's played a big role in getting you to North America.
Oh, absolutely. I moved away from home when I was 15 years old. I moved 3 hours south to a city called, well, Esbjerg, where I played this year in the lockdown too. And Mark was the head coach there for the pro team. And I was lucky enough to sign a pro contract. And, I was just going to be the third goalie and playing the junior ranks with Esbjerg. And I did so, but I got to practice a lot with the pro team too. And Mark was there to help me out. And he was a big reason for me to take the step to go to the North American Hockey League and, you know, get my feet wet with North American hockey, because it is a different style of hockey and different kind of type of game. So, very thankful for my year in Esbjerg and my year with Mark.
So then after Mark Peterson, so he was good friends with the GM and head coach, Steve Howard, of the Austin Bruins of the North American Hockey League. And reading a quote from him, he had never seen you play, not on video, not at all. So you just show up to camp. What was the experience like going to Minnesota and playing for the Austin Bruins for the first taste of North American hockey?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty, it's like kind of a surreal situation because I don't even think I ever spoke to Steve before I showed up. And I was, my billets that year were still on vacation when I arrived in Austin. So I had to live at Steve's house for, I think, like the first 10 days or something like that. So here I am. He's never seen me on video. I've never talked to the head coach or anything. And I just show up at his house and hey, I'm going to be living here for the next 10 days. So that was pretty, kind of a weird situation. But, you know, it was a great year. I had a lot of fun going to Austin. And I think it was a big learning year. Getting into North American hockey. Seeing what it's like, what's it like to be on the road? I mean, the longest road trip we have in Denmark is, from Esbjerg is like 4 hours or something like that. And here you're on the road for a 12-hour trip or something like that. And you gotta get used to that stuff. And I thought having that first year and having an organization like Austin giving you a chance as a 16-year-old coming in and get some game action, I thought that was huge.
Yeah, I think it's a good transition to North American hockey. Like you said, there are some differences, but for me, it's crazy. Like you said, as a 15-year-old kid moving from Denmark and then moving to North America, especially the States, what was the culture shock for you as a kid, not only moving away from home, but going to a different continent and different culture and food and stuff like that? What were some of the things that really surprised you when you got to North America?
Well, I honestly don't even think there's too many surprises for me because when I moved away from home the first time, it was honestly like a preparation year. I knew I wanted to go to North America after that. So it was more of getting used to being away from home, seeing what it's like. I mean, instead of having a 6 hours difference and being very, very far away from home, you know, it's a three hour drive. If you have any trouble, your parents can be coming down. They'll be there in 3 hours. It's not like when I'm in North America, if I have any trouble, we have to plan it out and they'll be here in a month or so. So, you know, it's different, but I was always already preparing for it in Esbjerg, and I knew what I wanted to do and how I wanted things to go out. And I came to Austin and I think the biggest surprise was honestly the travel and how hard it is on your body. Cause, you know, being on a bus for 12 hours is tough.
Especially as a tall guy, you don't got a lot of leg room at 6'7".
Like being 6'7" and having a 12-hour trip as a rookie is, you know, not fun. So, that was probably the biggest change, honestly.
So you were then selected in the import draft, first rounder, I may add. What was the conversation like with Medicine Hat? Did you know that you were going to go to the WHL? I'm always fascinated how it works because it's not only the WHL. You could be going anywhere from Victoria to Nova Scotia. And how do you narrow that process down? Is that something that your agent takes care of before?
Yeah, I mean, once the season was over with in Austin, that we just kind of, me and my agent sat down, we were kind of looking at teams, and he was calling and asking people, and teams were calling about me, and it was, for the most part, it was like kind of half so, like we didn't really know if they were going to take me or not. And then my agent brought up Medicine Hat, and my goalie coach Al Rooney from Austin played with the general manager at that time for Medicine Hat, Sean Clouston, and they played together. So then Al called Sean and talked to him about me and how things would work and this and that. And you know, they told my agent we're gonna select you. You're gonna come play for the Tigers. So I was super pumped for that. I was really, really excited, and just the whole situation in Medicine Hat was like I was definitely meant to be there. Like everyone was so nice to me. I had like an awesome billet family, and one thing is having an awesome Canadian billet family, but the mom was from Esbjerg, from Denmark, and I played with her nephew without even knowing of her. Like, it was the craziest situation you could ever imagine. And, you know, I still talk to them pretty much on a daily basis. Everything was just perfect there. I have zero bad things to say about that place.
Yeah, that's awesome. And especially when you can get a little bit of familiarity with someone that's from your home country as your billet mom. That's great that was able to set up nicely for you. Now, let's talk about on the ice, the difference. Like, off the ice, there's a lot of challenges you face. But now, at least you have one season in North American setting of hockey. Now, what was the biggest difference when you went to WHL as a goaltender for you that you really had to adjust?
I think coming into the league, I just thought the speed was the biggest thing. First of all, was how fast everything is moving and how good players are. I remember Sean telling me when I got to the league that you could expect that every night you play against someone that's going to be making millions in the NHL. And I was fascinated by that. I just thought that's crazy to even think about that. Like, here I am, 17 years old, and playing against future NHLers. I was still very kind of unknown, I guess you could say. Like, I didn't really break through until that I got my chance in Medicine Hat. So I was still very fascinated about everything, and was excited about the chance to come and play. And then just playing my first couple games, I remember having really good games, actually. I think the first two games I had close to 40 saves in both nice. Starts. But I remember thinking, if I have like a so-so game, I'm not going to be doing well here. I have to be at my best every night. And I think my best was like what my best was became my average. And then I just kept building on that. And I had a lot of confidence going through the year. And you know, without even not even like thinking about it, like, it was my draft year. And I get NHL teams talking to me, and you know, all of a sudden you're going to the top prospect game, and all of a sudden you're going to the draft with your family, and now you're an NHL draft pick. Like, it all happened so fast, you don't even realize what's going on. But looking back on it, it was an unbelievable year, and I'm so thankful for Medicine Hat giving me the chance, and just everything and everyone helping me out.
Yeah, you went back to Medicine Hat after your draft. We got some draft questions. It's coming up, the two-year anniversary, and it's the last live in-person draft. Crazy to think that almost 24 months ago now. But there's one part of that season. So you have a .921 save percentage with Medicine Hat. You're kicking out everything. How did you maintain that confidence? Now, it wasn't an ideal situation, being maybe undermanned a little bit, to be fair, but at the World Juniors, didn't go your way with Denmark. So then how do you come back and kind of flush that in the past? Was that a big learning experience as well?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, I got off to a really good start with Medicine Hat. I played some good games. I won a lot of hockey as well. And you're going to the World Juniors super confident and thinking we can really do something. And we start out getting blown out 14-0 by Canada. And you're kind of like, how do we go from here? Like, what's the plan here? How we're gonna move on here? We still have a full tournament to play, and we just got, like, we have a game in 24 hours. So yeah, I think the first game kind of took a breath out of me personally, and I was struggling throughout the tournament. I didn't play my best hockey, but you know, after the tournament was done, I had some time in the airport by myself, and I decided just to, you know what, just gonna look through all the film. And I looked through all my games, saw all my clips, and, you know, just kind of said to myself, it's over. There's nothing you can do about it. You just got to go back and help your team win in Medicine Hat. And that's all I could do. And then I came back, and after a month of being on a team where you're kind of giving up more goals than usual, you know, coming back, and I think we had a 1-1 game that we lost in overtime 2-1. And just gave me a lot of confidence, even though we lost. We're really close. It's a 1-1 game. I can actually play hockey. This is not just, you know, I didn't lose all my skill over a month of hockey or anything. I'm still a good goalie, and I can still improve and help my team win.
Yeah, and I think it's important for goalies to go through that adversity. Like you said, it's not always going to go your way, and you have to find a way to remain confident and remain positive that you can do this. So I think when you go through something like that, that's something that NHL teams are going to notice, and they did notice apparently, because you had a lot of buzz around you in the 2019 draft. I heard a rumor that 27 different teams spoke to you. What was the draft interview process like, and was it kind of overwhelming having all these different teams speaking to you? Like, that's got to be, that takes a lot of time to go through 27 in-depth interviews.
Yeah, you know what? It was. I had 27 meetings at the combine. I think I talked to 29 teams during the whole season. So there's only a couple teams I didn't speak to. Who were the ones you didn't speak with?
Yeah.
I think I didn't talk to. I know Philadelphia wasn't one of them, and I forget who the other one was. But there's two teams I didn't talk to.
Right.
I know Philadelphia was one of them. I can't remember the other one, but. Other than that, I spoke to every other team, it was kind of a crazy year. But you know, especially going to the combine, that was where my eyes really opened up. And you know, there's like a little meeting where they tell you how everything is going to be working and what you're going to do and this and that. And you know, you get your paper handed out, and I look at my list, and I thought they made a mistake, because I see like so many things on my paper, and then I can't remember. I don't even know the guys I was sitting next to, but I look at their paper, and there's some stuff, but there's not like nearly as much. So I'm thinking they definitely made a mistake here. This is not how it should be. And I ask the guy about it, and he's like, no, you got to be there at this time and this time and this time. And I was just overwhelmed by that. But I mean, you get to speak to so many unbelievable persons, and like you get interviewed by like former NHL stars. I mean, going into when I got interviewed by Detroit, I'm sitting down and speaking to Steve Yzerman.
Wow.
Here I am, and I remember calling my dad, because Steve Yzerman was my my dad's favorite player. He was very jealous. He was almost asking me to take a picture with him. But no, it's just an awesome experience. And I think me being able to just take it all in and enjoy it while it was happening made it so much better. And looking back on it, it's pretty crazy what happened.
Yeah, awesome. And we're glad you ended up in Ottawa. You were the second goalie taken in that draft. Hell, in the last 5 years, only five goalies have been drafted ahead of you, a couple in the first round. And then you saw what happened in 2019. It was really interesting. The first goalie went off the board. I'm not even going to try his name. A Russian goalie. And then Ottawa trades up immediately, thinking, hey, maybe somebody's going to take Mads before we get a chance. So they move up seven picks. Now, are you sitting there when you see the trade? Are you pretty sure that they're going to take you, or was it waiting until the name got called?
Wait, so what happened was, I remember, I think the first goalie that was taken my year was Spencer Knight.
Oh, true. I missed him in the first round. The second goalie was one
in the first round, and I came out of the first round the day, and then I was talking to my agent, and he's like, that's a good thing, because that's going to be moving everything up and something like that. And then they were talking about, I heard people talk about like when one's goalie is going to be taken, then the goalie train is going to be rolling and goalies are going to be selected. This Russian guy got taken by Carolina. And then I heard there's a trade, and I thought, okay, the goalie train is going to be going and there's a chance for me. I know I'm in the rankings. I'm right about the third, kind of second or third, fourth goalie ranked in the draft, so there's a chance of me going here. So I was very excited to see where the trade was going to end up and who got the pick. And when I heard Ottawa, I looked at my brother, and my brother was getting some big eyes, because he's been a Sens fan for maybe even like 5-6 years before I even got drafted to Ottawa.
That's so awesome.
So he was getting some big eyes, and he was very, very pumped. And obviously,
who's your brother's favorite Senator all time?
Well, all time, I think it's Samuel Alfredson.
Yeah.
Great answer.
But, at the moment, it was Brady Tkachuk, and Brady was there at the draft, and he was out at the kind of meet and greet lounger where you get to see your family after. My brother is always like a guy that's not afraid to speak up or anything. And I think me and Shane Pinto are standing and talking to Brady Tkachuk, and my brother is standing right next to me, and he's like, I've never seen him be so shy. I literally have to be like, hey, say hi to this guy. That's your favorite player. So, yeah, he was very excited about that. And just me going to camp and like telling him how things work around there. I mean, it's obviously exciting for me to go to an NHL camp and be around NHL guys, but also for him, like it's his favorite team. He loves watching them. He follows them. He's watching as much hockey as he can and following every result. Obviously it's difficult with the time difference here, but he's watching as much as he can. And he's a real Senators fan for sure. So I think he's very pumped about what's going on.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I think it's safe to say we got a Sens fan for life in your brother now that you're on the team as well. And hey,
oh yeah, the first thing he told me was I'm taking that jersey right after.
Nice. Hey, he got the right last name on there, so he's ready to go.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Yeah. So when you go down to the stage and you're with Pinto and you're talking to Brady, what's Brady saying to you? What's that like?
Well, he's just welcoming us and asking about it and. Yeah, just being a really good person. I mean, it's pretty surreal. You see the guy playing in the NHL, and all of a sudden he's standing there talking to you, and it's just awesome. It's hard to even like think back on because so much stuff happened, but you know it's awesome. Like you get to meet all these people and go down, and you meet so many people, and you get to talk to so many great people, and. Then it's just a quick turnaround. You're going straight to Ottawa from there. And then camp's going on and, so many new faces, but, it's definitely one of the best, things I've ever experienced.
Stick taps to the Great Dane for hopping on with us, and stay tuned for tomorrow's Locked On Senators for part two of that fun conversation. Make sure you're subscribed to Locked On Senators wherever you get your podcast. That way you'll never miss an episode. And if you want daily coverage of the Senators in between shows, you can follow us on social media at Send Central on Twitter. Pilsy, we're all over social media, but also at Bet Online. Playoff time is here, and it's the best time to be wagering on live sports, especially if the team you don't like goes up a goal early. There's so much time and the odds always swing in your favor. That's why at BetOnline, we are there all the time. It's my homepage on my desktop internet. I love BetOnline, and I'm there to make money. It's business, not pleasure, although I do have fun when I see green numbers. Pilsy's parlay of the day was oh so close to hitting last night, but we'll get into that soon. First, let's tell you how you go about getting one of the best welcome bonuses in the business at BetOnline. Now, you create your free account, and then when you make your first deposit, put in the promo code LOCKEDON, and 50% of what you put in is automatically added to your account. It's that easy, guys. Put in $200, bingo, bango, bongo, $100 in your account. Put in $100, you get 50 free play dollars just like that. Now, what are you going to do? You're going to risk it to win it, to earn it. That's the way the promo works. Of course it is. Pilsy, lead these people in the right direction. You're coming oh so close. It's only a matter of time before Pilsy's playoff parlay of the day hits.
I sound like a broken record, but one goal off yet again last night. I had Tampa Bay money line and the under of 5. They won 4-2. Therefore, the under did not hit, unfortunately. But as I was right with my prediction with Vegas, Montreal, I think we're going to have – I'm going with the same formula, Ross. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. So we're heading Vegas Golden Knights money line. -255. Pretty sure that Vegas is going to win this one based on the odds. But Montreal has been an upset machine this playoff, so it's tough to tell. But I'm going to combine that with the over of 5. That's at -135. So we're taking the Vegas Golden Knights money line and the over of 5. let's put $10 into that and you're going to win only $14.23. We're trying to get the green numbers rolling again here, Ross, and not taking too many chances here. I don't want to be one goal short again, but I really think Vegas is, like, if Carey Price isn't perfect, they're going to score 5 or 6 goals on him themselves. So that is Pilsy's playoff parlay of the day.
Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get into the action and don't forget the promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. It's BetOnline, your online sportsbook expert. All right, Pilsy, breaking news.
Oh, let's hear it.
Spartacat has been discovered. I don't think I've seen him all season long, but there he is wearing the black 2D. Still has the old pants on with the old logo, but we'll let it slide because Spartacat is alive and well. It's such a great day. The only day I think could be better in terms of personalities just outside the Senators' realm. How loud would the arena be if Lyndon Sluage came out to sing the national anthem at the next home game?
Yeah, Lyndon Sluage and Spartacat, those two are absolute legends. I would love to see Lyndon Sluage back. That ending, I don't know what you call it, not a handshake, but you know what he does, the kiss, thumbs up, wink. That is just all-time classic. And hey, Spartacat's back, but you're burying the lead here. Where's Belly? Where's Belly at? The Belleville mascot. If Spartacat is alive and well, we need an update on Belly.
Yeah, well, Spartacat's cheating on him too. He's with the Chio Bear. Now, we do want to give some stick taps as well. The reason why Spartacat is out in the town with Chris Neal, I should add, who looks fantastic with all his teeth in. You don't often see Nealer like that. But they're at Roger Nielsen House, which is, of course, a wing of Chio that helps families when they're going through. It's a pediatric palliative care hospice delivering family-centered care in Ottawa and beyond. It's such an amazing part of Chio that has been, of course, ingrained with Ottawa culture and the Senators organization going back to the days where Roger Nielsen was behind the Sens bench, and they're celebrating their 15th year anniversary. So stick taps to Rogers Nielsen's house, and we just want to give them thanks for all the great things that they do. Great to see honorary chairs, not only Chris Neal, but his wife Caitlin, who do amazing work in the community, to go and give their respects to such an important place.
Yeah, you love to see that. Chris Neal, hard nose on the ice, soft-hearted off of it. What a great guy. Like this guy, I feel like there's a reason why Sens fans love him so much. It's not just because he was feisty on the ice and was entertaining to watch. Never suspended. So clean physicality, but also he makes an effort to be a part of the community. And man, when was the last time Chris Neal played a game for the Sens? 2017 round two?
You remember the game, right? He told Tanner Glass to have a seat. He was getting a little too hairy in that series. And Nealer just went up after a whistle, said, no, this isn't how the games are going to work. And Kyle Turris, I remember, spoke about it ad nauseum, just being like, Nealer changed the complexion of the playoffs with that. There's that great gif. I know Sens Chirp loves to use it, though, where Nealer's skating past Glass in the penalty box, just giving him the smile and the two-arm pump up. Obviously, it was a home game. Nealer, just an absolute warrior, a guy who anybody would love to have on their team. You know who else people would like to have on their team, as well as a guy like Chris Neal, is a number one franchise-altering centerman like Jack Eichel. Now, reports coming out from Pierre LeBrun that a deal is inching closer to completion, that interested teams, they know who they are. We'll get you the list in a moment. But off the top of your head, Pilsy, where do you see the best fit for Jack Eichel, who has 4 years left on his contract at $10 million a year? But that price is kind of what you'd expect for a player of his caliber.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think if there's one thing we're sure of, that pretty much Jack Eichel needs to be dealt before the draft. I think that's going to happen for sure.
Like, because the Sabres need a first rounder from this draft. Although you would think a lot of teams are targeting picks in next year, but you think that from a perspective of PR and getting a new shiny toy, they're already going to draft first, but you think getting a second draft pick in the top 10, let's say, is crucial, because then we can narrow down who's interested and who's available based on who has top 10 picks.
Yeah, I think that's accurate, Ross, especially like they don't have time to drag out a rebuild. Like, you want to get that another top end prospect in your system ASAP. Like, they don't want to draft a 18-year-old guy next year and then have to wait 3 years until he's ready, that kind of thing, right? Like, they got to get the ball rolling big time here. So I think I was looking at the teams that Pierre LeBrun mentioned in his article that have been interested, and I really see a good fit for him in LA. Like, here's the thing. First off, I tried to think, what's Jack Eichel going to be looking for? He's going to be looking to get out of Buffalo and probably go somewhere nice because he's suffered. So I think he would love to live in LA. He's got the money to afford to have a good time there.
Manhattan Beach is unreal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He knows that that's a storied franchise with the right people steering that ship. But then you might be saying, Pilsy, why would Jack Eichel go there? They have so many centers. Exactly. They want to bring one of those centers back to Buffalo. Buffalo's going to want a young center as a prospect to try to reboot this thing. Now, I don't think Quentin Byfield would be on the table, but if you're looking at a guy like Alex Turcotte, Tyler Madden, some of these guys that could be centerpieces of the deal, then LA is picking 8th overall in this draft. That's a nice spot to be at. I think Buffalo would love to have a chance to get 1st and 8th. And then I'm not sure what other pieces would move, because like a trade like this, like their Carlson trade, who could have predicted those were the pieces? So I think that's kind of where you would center the deal around. And it makes a lot of sense too, because LA is losing a lot of money on dead cap stuff. Like Ilya Kovalchuk, they're paying over $6 million this year. Phaneuf, they're paying $4 million because they bought him out. Yeah. We all remember that. But that $4 million is going to $1 million. So you're already looking at $9.5 million in salary cleared here. So that's basically going to clear enough space to bring Jack Eichel on. So I think, and then you look, you got a number, and Kopitar's still there. So you have Kopitar, Eichel, Byfield as your top three centermen. Yeah. Then you want to utilize Drew Doughty while he's still worth the contract he's getting, because he's going to be overpaid in a few years. And you got Jonathan Quick. So you got the makings of building a contender. And then once you get Jack Eichel over there, I think it'd be easy to convince other guys to come. It'd be easy to pick up talented depth pieces in free agency, and you can move more pieces to get ready. But for me, LA seems to make a lot of sense for Jack Eichel.
I think I said 4 years left. There's 5 years left on his contract, but Pills, it doesn't matter where he wants to go. The no movement clause kicks in 2022. So if Minnesota, who is rumored to be among the 6 teams, here, let's just get you Pierre LeBrun's list. These are the teams that LeBrun believes make sense: Los Angeles, Minnesota, Anaheim, Columbus, Philadelphia, and the Rangers. He says among others, but let's narrow it down to that scope. Again, the common thread here, all teams here have high picks in the first round. The Rangers are 15th, but they, of course, have a massive prospect pool that they can dip into in there. I think LA and New York are both best, and they're the most glamorous destinations as well. But imagine Minnesota. They're a team who pushed Vegas to 7 games without him. They have an elite talent now in Kirill Kaprizov, who, because he waited so long to come over, he needs a new contract. So they're going to have to figure out a way to balance and pay him as well. The cap won't be an issue, but I think Minnesota could be an interesting spot for Jack Eichel to land. We know he'd probably like to choose the Rangers. It's closer to his home in Boston, but at that same token, you don't get any choice. It could be Columbus, who has 3 first-round picks. They have 3 first-round picks, and I mean, they're not going to get anybody in free agency. So what do you do if you're the Blue Jackets and you've just seen all your best players leave? I don't know. I think that they could be a dark horse in all just the fact that they're on this list, I think, tells you that they're very interested, and we know Yarmo is not afraid to make a big move and a big splash. So that's secondary, but I think I like what you're saying with LA. Pilsy, final thing I'll say here, the reason why it's crucial that he moves sooner rather than later is a $7.5 million signing bonus due on July 1st. Or July 28th, I guess.
That's the only reason the Sens aren't in this discussion, right?
Well, yeah, he's got one more set of signing bonuses, $7.5 million, not this upcoming, not the year after this upcoming year, but the one after. And in those years, it's only $2.5 million in base salary. So it'd be nice during those years, but the other ones, it's $10 million all in regular salary. But we've seen this before, Pilsy. If LA has to pay that $7.5 million, the price goes way up in acquisition fee.
Yeah, definitely. But also, I think, like, if you're a team like LA, cash isn't really a problem, right? Like, cap space, yeah, for sure, you want to manage that. But cash, they could have that ready. So I don't know if that would deter them, but it would change the price. I agree with you there. Where I really think Columbus is just not going to happen whatsoever. Because if you're Columbus, the last thing you want to do, you're trying to kickstart a rebuild here, you have all these first-round picks, is give them all up just to get a pouty Jack Eichel in your system and have a guy that's like, well, sweet, now I'm in Buffalo Light in Columbus, another cold, small city with a team and management. No offense to the management, but they haven't accomplished anything, right?
Well, like, new coach.
Yeah. Jack Eichel knows all about new coaches too. That doesn't usually help him out. No offense. So yeah. Columbus, it would not make sense for them. It wouldn't make sense for Eichel. So I have them out. I like Minnesota because Minnesota has the depth to make it interesting. They have the decor. They have a lot of depth up front, but then you're looking at goaltending. It's a bit of a question. And I don't know if Jack Eichel wants to live in Minnesota. So I really
but
think,
again, he doesn't get a choice.
Yeah, but he gets a choice in how he can react and how he can assimilate to a team. And we've seen guys go places and say, yeah, I don't like it here. We've seen that in Columbus. Jeff Carter, how about that? That did not work out whatsoever, and they paid a hefty price to get him. He didn't even spend a full season there, I don't think. So that's the kind of thing you got to be hindering of. And I think if you're a guy like Jack Eichel, yeah, the no movement clause isn't in your favor at this time. So that's why they got to move him. But I just think if you're a team that's paying that much to acquire a guy like that, you're going to make sure that he wants to be there and he's going to fit. Otherwise, sure, you're bringing this talented guy in, but you've now brought a cancer into your locker room. And that can't happen if you're a rebuilding team or you're a team trying to make a push to be a contender.
He's a superstar for sure. And I think in the past, he's had that rap where it seems like he's kind of picking the coach or picking the GM. I know that there's been talk like that, but you think he'd really just put up that much of a stink? That could do pretty horrible things for his reputation, I think, league-wide. I mean, we saw it with Danny Heatley, but he even had a no-movement clause, so he could say, no, I'm not going to Edmonton. But Jack Eichel doesn't have that luxury. I think that he's just going to have to make the best out of any situation, but you could argue on the flip side, name a situation that's worse than Buffalo. So any way yeah. he goes, it's an improvement.
Definitely, yeah. And I think that is a good point. And yeah, like, I don't think he would like hold out or anything, but he may not be excited or passionate or be a big part of the core group in off-ice stuff or I don't know, something like that. So I'm just thinking, if you're a team that's pushing your chips in to get Jack Eichel, you better hope that you have the right setup to make it work.
Well, he's got his good buddy in Columbus. I think Zach Werenski and he go way, way back. And maybe then Seth
Jones. For 1 year.
Well, then maybe Seth Jones goes, hey, why would I leave? We just got Jack Eichel. Anyway, yeah, I'm just saying, there's a ripple effect when you get a player of that magnitude. And that's why we're spending so much time talking about it. Like, you thought the Erik Karlsson trade was super important. Erik Karlsson was 28 years old and about to sign a huge, huge ticket when you knew there were injury history. Now, I'm not saying that means it was the right move to trade him, although the return, of course, now in hindsight looks great. But Jack Eichel's a 24-year-old centerman who could be an MVP of this league for years to come. So this is not like your typical, oh, it's a big-name player getting traded. You're looking at one of the best players in the National Hockey League.
Yep, I agree. Definitely, it's that magnitude. And another thing to keep mention of, Ross, and this just occurred to me, is he had a real dispute with the Buffalo's team doctors about how he was going to go about this injury. So there's no way he's going to a team that, or again, he doesn't have a choice, but there's no way he's going to be happy about going to a team that isn't going to let him deal with that. I forget what injury it is, sorry, but deal with that, and that's a serious one. Deal with that injury the way he wants to deal with it. So I bet that's a big factor of this as well.
Oh, it's going to be very interesting to watch. I love when players are going to get moved that are huge pieces when they aren't Ottawa Senators on the receiving end.
That's refreshing.
Yeah, is it ever. So we'll be monitoring that situation as well. The Ottawa Senators not in the mix, nor should they, not the stage in the rebuild to be going after a guy like that. I say almost tongue-in-cheek, because when would you not want to add a player of that magnitude? But Ottawa's got a great thing going. I think right now you're kind of guessing still at what the ceilings are for Josh Norris and Shane Pinto. So it makes more sense for the veteran center that is so coveted by this organization to go after a guy who's already in their 30s and you can move on from after a year or two when you know what the deal is. Like, is Shane Pinto a number two center? Is Josh Norris a number one center? If these questions are answered in spades that yes, they are, then all of a sudden you don't want to have them stuck behind a guy who's eating up a ton of the cap and then takes away from other guys that are due for contracts when that time comes. Remember that Jake Sanderson's likely to sign towards the end of next year and burn a year off his contract. We see that often with college kids. Is that almost a benefit that Jake Sanderson's only going to have two full NHL seasons to prove himself to get his second contract? I think Stutzla, you're more looking at 8 years right away, lock him up at whatever the market value is. But it just adds another element, and which is why I think Ottawa is better. If Dougie Hamilton's available, I mean, a right shot defenseman who plays 25 minutes a night, then I could see that being an addition to the core. But when you're looking at a centerman in particular, I think that it's better to go shorter term, older, more experienced guy who can play, yeah, first line, but also if Norris is humming that night or Pinto's playing well, you don't mind this guy dropping down and playing 14, 15 minutes in a few games, whereas you get more development out of Pinto playing 18, 19, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Like, obviously, we would love to have Jack Eichel in a Senators uniform, but it's just, it's not the time and the price you're going to pay and the change in the locker room culture that might occur. The stars aren't aligned for it to happen. And then you get the $7.5 million signing bonus, and that pretty much does it.
Yeah, that does it for sure. But with Buffalo, maybe Sam Reinhart's a guy who Ottawa looks at, who's 25 years old, 1 year older than Jack Eichel. He's a pending RFA, and it seems like there's a new scenery required for him as well. So just a little note as we say goodbye for today, that is Sam Reinhart a guy who could find his way to Ottawa? Imagine that, having three Browns, no relation, and then two Reinharts in the system, no relation. That's enough to put your brain in a pretzel for sure. But Philzy, any last notes before we go? It's going to be really fun to have part two with Mads Sogard tomorrow. We've got our Send Central Citizen back. We're going all the way to Sweden this week. We'll have that for you on Friday as well.
Ross, I know it's been a packed show, but I want to talk about last night's game two, 4-2 win by the Tampa Bay Lightning. And the one thing I want to talk about, and this grinds my gears, boils my blood, ticks me off, all the cliches you want to use. That penalty on Braden Point for goaltending interference, I was going to lose my mind watching that. And because goalie-friendly show, that's so unfair to these goalies that this keeps happening, that Adam Pellick fully shoves Braden Point into Varlamov as he's going top speed, chasing that puck for a breakaway. And then Braden Point just bowls over Semyon Varlamov, and then he has a concussion spotter and he's got to go out for a bit. And like, that has got to be 100% on Pellick. And if I'm Varlamov, I'm giving Pellick the cold shoulder for a couple days. Like, that's reckless. And the worst part is the defenseman gets away with it every single time. Like, right away it happened, and I was like, Braden Point's getting that penalty. And a guy like Braden Point, like, I think that's one of the guys in the league that everyone respects as a gamer. Like, he's not looking to injure anyone. He's not looking to cut corners. Like, he's so good, he doesn't have to do that. So he tries to play the game the right way. And you can see right after it happens, he's saying, when Islanders guys are grabbing him, he's like, look at the replay, watch it. This wasn't me. And the fact that he gets a penalty, they need to sort that out, because that's absolute garbage. And then, of course, the Islanders score on the power play, of course.
Yeah, the hockey gods got them back, though, because then Tampa scored with seven players on the ice. So, yeah, you know, you win some, you lose some in that situation, but there was no chance Tampa was losing that game. I have a future on the Islanders, but even I bet on Tampa to win in regulation last night. Their season was on the line. You don't go to Nassau down 0-2 and expect to come back and win the series. So Tampa showed their resolve at home, getting the win, and now it's a split going to Long Island.
Yeah, and Ross, we love that narrative of New York Saints. Well, that was not the case last night. The Tampa Bay Lightning finally ticked off the Islanders so much that they started taking bad penalties. Like, Travis Zajac had a bunch of non-hockey play penalties. There was roughing penalties, guys getting into it after the scrum. So they finally were able to crack that discipline of the New York Islanders.
Well, you saw at the end of the game, Zajac like pile drove Anthony Cirelli into the ice, and Cirelli looked a little
off. He had to go to the locker room right away, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, end of the game, so he probably just...
Yeah, but he didn't sell you with the guys, right? He went right off.
Yeah, and Zajac's probably realizing, like, Oliver Wahlstrom was ready and healthy, but they were playing so well over that stretch, and then
you finally get a loss. So Zajac likely on his way back to being a healthy scratch. So why not go out with a bit of a bang and cause some feathers to be ruffled? So that is a very physical series. We're seeing that in the other semifinal as well. And that'll be a great game tonight. We'll recap that. And as I mentioned, part two with Belleville Sens goalie. I almost called him the starter. Not going to be long before he is. Mads Søgaard. Stay tuned for all that. Have a great day. For Brandon Piller, I'm Ross Levitan. This has been the Locked On Senators podcast. Your team every day.